Welcome back to the Big Sports Breakfast. Coming up in the next half hour, we're going to speak to Jack Fleming, the Tasmania Jack Jumpers assistant coach, after their incredible triumph in the NBL Championship Series, winning the deciding Game 5 away from home as well. Two-point margin. In fact, the last, three games of the series, all decided by 2 points. It's being lauded as the best championship series in the league's history, and we'll get Brad Rosen's take on that later in the week as well. But Jared Duffy will speak to as well to get the latest markets from Tab. Also, in the next half hour or so, within the next half hour, and then we'll take your calls beyond 8:30 as well. 1353 53, and on the text line 0419 767 272. And what's this one, Loza? Two observations. The score Thursday night flattered the Roosters, and as such, I believe the Penrith juggernaut will win a fourth straight premiership and could amass six or seven in a row. Secondly, Canterbury are the most impotent side in the NRL when attacking 20 metres out. They have no idea. Your thoughts, asks Adrian at Castle Hill, Loz.
I agree with Penrith. I think they're well on their way to winning a fourth straight premiership from what I've seen in the first month. Nothing had shocked me there. Canterbury, yeah, a little bit disappointed with the way they attacked on the weekend. I think they just made a lot of errors too with the ball. I'm just looking at the numbers here now. South were nearly perfect in that game. And I didn't think so at the time.
From as far as completion.
So if these numbers are right, South had a completion rate of 94%. Which is massive in today's game. And a side like South, if you've got 94%, and I know they haven't found their rhythm with the footy, but they'll beat most teams if they're completing at 94%. But to get onto your point with the Bulldogs attack, yeah, they do need to improve their attack. Burton is a wonderful player, but he frustrates a lot of people. I think that's where the frustration comes, because you can see it one week and the next week you're thinking, oh, wish he had done X, Y, and Z. They're trying really hard, but it's just not as fluent as some other teams. And you could say that about a lot of teams. Like, their attack isn't fluent. But they are a defensive-based team at the moment, and that's what they're working really hard on. And I think they're getting that part of the game right. So they're building on the back of defence, but they'll have to get their attack right at some stage. Just wondering whether that Hutchison is the right bloke. I think he's steady, he does a good job, but they need a halfback desperately, and I know they've chased halfbacks, can't find one. So I'd love to see something happening in that position. I'll tell you one bloke who played well on the weekend. Max King. Plays well above his weight every week. And that's the other thing. I think their forwards at times just get overridden, and other teams are too powerful in the middle. But I thought the other day the Bulldogs handle themselves well physically. But if they play like that every game, I think it'll take its toll at some stage, because they're not a big physical team. But, yeah, I agree in terms of their attack. It's got to be a lot better than what it was. In terms of the worst in the NRL, no, I don't think so. I don't think so, but it does need a lot of work.
Yeah, big game Friday night. They've got the Roosters. That's the 6 o'clock game. That's at a Core Stadium on Friday night. They're $3.30 currently with Table, plus 10.5. Big line, the Roosters.
It's amazing, isn't it? So when you watch Lachie Galvin play, and he's playing three games of NRL. He's played three games of NRL and gets the ball and just plays. Then you watch Dylan Browns and you're watching Matty Burtons, who have got so much to offer. I think you get a bit frustrated because they've been around a while. You know what they can do, but they don't. So I think that's where we get frustrated. In particular, if you're a 5'8", or an old 5'8 watching, you go, we need to see a bit more from you. If a young bloke can do that, why aren't you? Games on the line. Come on, we need you to step up a bit here. You know, what are you looking for in the opposition to suggest that you can blow this game apart? Whereas young Galvin, he's just coming up with the right plays at the right time and getting the job done. So that's what I get frustrated when I watch a couple of these blokes play, and you know they've got, a lot more in them, but they just can't find it at the moment.
Let's talk some basketball. And, one of the better stories in Australian sport in recent times is the Tasmania Jack Jumpers clinching that title on the weekend. And great now to be joined by their assistant coach, Jack Fleming, is joining us. Jack, a very good morning to you. How are you?
Good morning. I am fantastic and happy to be here. Thanks, guys.
I bet you are fantastic. And a massive congratulations to you and the club for winning your first title there with the Jack Jumpers. Just take us through, firstly, the scenes and adoration of the Tasmanian public when you arrived home.
Well, it was quite incredible. We knew that the way the team has captured the state across the last 3 years, it was going to be massive. So from the moment we walked through the airport, you know, there was cheering and photos and people crying. And then we went into our home arena, MyState Bank, and have I think there was in between 5,000 and 7,000 people there, absolutely over the moon. So I can only imagine that it'll continue, but the support and celebrations across the whole state have been incredible.
Yeah, tell us about the mindset going into that Game 5, because I think a lot of people thought after winning Game 3 with that miraculous basket by Jack McVay that going back to home, that was your best opportunity to win the championship. And then when you lost that, everyone just thought, oh, geez. You know, externally thought they've missed their time because Melbourne are going to be so hard to beat at home after having that loss previously.
Yeah, it was a short period of time, but we definitely felt like we had some opportunities that we missed back at home in Game 4. However, you know, we didn't have a lot of time to dwell on it, so we knew that we could just recover and move on and tidy some things up, that it was going to be another game that went down to the wire in Game 5. So we just have to stay present and get ready for the next game. That's what the series is all about. And at that point, we didn't feel like home court was going to be an influencing factor. So it was really important that we got to the next game and we just flushed that one. So, that was probably the main thing that we needed to do in between Game 4 and Game 5 was not get too emotionally invested in the highs and the lows of the series.
How do you feel you were able to, you know, basically curtail Melbourne United, who, you know, had the best record all season? And, you know, the last three games are only decided by 2 points. But how do you think you were able to win the title over the course of 5 games against a side like that?
Yeah, we definitely grew a comfort level with the physicality as the series went on. You know, we knew it was going to be a dogfight between two seriously physical teams. So by the time we got to that Game 5, we felt that we'd handled it well in different patches. So that was definitely a really, really big influence on the game. And then we had to exploit our mismatches down in the post, which you did a good job of in Game 4. And then that became really handy down the stretch in Game 5 as well. So we've had some great battles over the last 3 years, really, with Melbourne United. So to do it in the Grand Final series was something unforgettable for the league, really.
Mm. And Jordan Crawford, geez, he had a good final series, 32 points in this game, but he scored 20 points in that first quarter just to keep you in touch, didn't he?
Yeah, he's had a real challenging playoff series, you know, with some ebbs and flows in terms of his form and, you know, being down in the dumps a little bit, but he just stayed true to himself and, you know, he got that scoreboard ticking over for us in the first half. We looked up at quarter time and didn't realise he had 19 points. I don't think he'd missed a shot at that point. So credit to his belief in himself and his work, and was a massive factor in setting us up, especially in that first half.
We're speaking to Jack Fleming, Tasmania Jack Jumpers assistant coach, in the aftermath of their title win. Give us an insight, Jack, into Scott Roth, I guess, behind the scenes and what makes him special as a coach.
Yeah, I think from the moment this franchise started, his ability to pick guys who are of high character, hardworking, and got a little bit of a chip on their shoulder. So he picked guys that represent exactly what the Tasmanian people are about. And then he just goes out there and allows them to be themselves and do their thing. So an incredible evaluator of people. And then to bring really a whole state along a journey and allow 12 guys to play their best basketball on the biggest stages. A credit to him and his leadership and his experiences along the way.
Yeah, and after you win a championship, it never stops. You got to bask in the glory, but then it moves on again. Out of the squad that played this year, how many of them will be back next year?
Well, at the moment, I believe we have, I think it's 5 or 6 contracted players. So it's really exciting that we've got our core re-signed already, and the front office is working away. So we're hoping to have, you know, that stability throughout the franchise and go into next year with that core group, so that we can continue to grow and improve. And the Tassie fans have gotten behind those guys, so that's what we're looking to do.
Yeah, I think what you've been able to do down there in Tasmania as well is not only create a profile for basketball, but to create genuine interest. And I think, you know, your memberships will grow and there'll be a lot more people wanting to be involved in the Jack Jumpers in the years to come.
Definitely. It's a special team, and to be able to be called the Tasmania Jack Jumpers, not the Hobart Devils, and connect the north and the south of the state has been something that's, you know, we want to be a team for all of Tasmania. And so we look forward to continue to try and grow the sport and hopefully see some future young Tassie fellas be Jack Jumpers.
Fair to say, Jack, this is the top of the tree as far as your basketball journey is concerned so far.
It's hard to beat. It's hard to beat down to the wire in a game 5. So yeah, feel very fortunate to do it with 15 great people and enjoy the journey with the Tassie guys.
And what's the next couple of days look like, Jack? Come on, be honest.
Well, it moves pretty quick. We've actually got our exit interviews today, so there's no wasting time. Some more celebrations, and then we have our MVP dinner on Friday night, which will be a great commemoration of the fantastic year that has been. So looking forward to that.
Oh, that'll be a great celebration. And just, you know, it's going to go down in history, the Jack McVeigh game winner in Game 3. Of all the buzzer beaters you've seen, I mean, how crazy was that one? And I'm guessing as a coaching staff, I mean, it wasn't a high percentage shot, let's face it, was it?
Well, we definitely do as coaches that as soon as he got the ball, he was not passing it. That was one thing. But, you know, with 4 seconds to go on the clock, I didn't think he was going to pull up from half court. But the main thing was that he backed himself, and it was an actual shot, not a heave. So we don't expect anything less from Jack in those moments.
Sorry, it could have been history repeating itself, couldn't it, in Game 5 when Melbourne got the ball there with only a couple of seconds left? What were you thinking then?
Yeah, that's a great question. Well, I mean, when the ball left Dally's hands, I felt like it was off, but that doesn't mean anything till it hit the ground. So, yeah, it was a little bit of a gut-wrenching feeling, and yeah, felt like we'd rewinded time with the same turnover happening. Just we were on the other side of it, so yeah, very fortunate was probably the main thing when that ball didn't go in.
Well, once again, Jack, a huge congratulations to you and the club on what is a great triumph, and in Australian sports, just such a great story, and enjoy it for the next few days while you can.
Thanks so much, guys. Appreciate the chat.
Jared Duffy from TAB, good morning.
Morning, Mido. Morning, Loz.
Tigers fans are just all of a sudden booking their finals tickets. Is the market with them?
Well, they're outsiders again this week, which probably would be good music to their ears. Dolphins $1.65, Tigers $2.20. I must admit, I didn't have a look how far down the ladder they are price-wise to win it, and $67. And what are they? $4.25 to make the 8 if you think they can maintain that form. But No, it's been a good story so far, hasn't it? Thursday night's match, we've had a move here, Mido, with the expectation that Cameron Munster will be named tonight. And $1.65, Melbourne into $1.53. Brisbane $2.25 out to $2.45, a line of 4.5 points. Other games of interest, well, South, $2 outsiders against the Warriors at $1.80. Manly $2.25, Penrith $1.62. I mentioned that Dolphins Tigers price, and the other one definitely generating plenty of interest is the late one on Sunday, where Canberra $1.75, Parramatta $2.05.
What about in the AFL, Daff? I think there's probably like a standout with the Panthers, and that's not been anything that no one knows.
What about Brisbane?
Oh, yeah, but from what I've seen so far, Penrith just look a standout for me.
Okay.
But, you know, obviously everything can happen. I'm just talking over the first 4 weeks of the comp.
Sure.
Two, by the way. And I'm just looking at these prices for the AFL. And, geez, I think it's only four teams that can only win the AFL.
Well,
you're Carlton included in that.
Yeah, I'm not even sure whether the numbers finish at four. It's only the early part of the season. We've got the Giants, the faves at five. Obviously, Sydney were beaten by Richmond at the weekend, which was a big shock. Mm-hmm. They've gone from 5.50 out to six. Then we do have Carlton and Melbourne at eight. Collingwood, nine. Well, they got the win. You'd want to see them keep doing that. Port Adelaide, 11. Well, Brisbane are yet to win a game, but they get an easy one this week against North Melbourne. Geelong are into 13. They did the job nicely yesterday. And even Fremantle, unbeaten, they were written off before the season got underway. They're at $21. So I suppose on form so far, yes, the Giants are a standout, but as we know, it only takes one injury or a bit of a form slump, yeah, and all of a sudden you're under pressure. Just on this week's matches, Loz, it's gather round for those who are unfamiliar with what that's all about. All of these matches this week are played in Adelaide, not necessarily all at Adelaide Oval. Some will be played at Norwood and Mount Barker, but the big one is Thursday night, where Adelaide host Melbourne at Adelaide Oval. $2.25, the Crows, $1.65, Melbourne. Other matches of interest, well, you'd think Brisbane would beat North Melbourne there, $1.14. Fremantle and Carlton, this should be a good one on Saturday afternoon. Frio, $2.25, Carlton, $1.65. The Bulldogs, slight outsiders at $2 against Geelong, $1.80. And the late one on Sunday night, Collingwood priced up to their very best, $1.28. Hawthorn, who were touched up yesterday at $3.70. So they're all open for the weekend, but keep in mind, they're all in Adelaide.
I know Collingwood had a victory on the weekend, but after the start they've had and after the start that the Broncos, the Lions have
had. The Lions.
I just can't see them making a grand final.
You wouldn't think
it,
so.
You know?
You wouldn't think so. Well, you know, I know that he said it's not panic stations at Brisbane, but you'd think it would be because, you know, there's only 18 matches to go. So to make it, you've got to win 12 or 13 matches in this day and age, plus a good percentage. So there's not much margin for error there, is there? So maybe this season we'll get back on track this week with a big win over North Melbourne, but if they were only to stagger over the line, it does raise some pretty serious question marks. And, of course, in the press there's been a lot of talk over the past 4 or 5 days about this trip to Las Vegas and what that's done behind the scenes. So that'll play out because the press don't really have anybody else to pick on this week, so it's the Lions.
We've got an A-League game tonight. The Central Coast Mariners are up against Melbourne City, Daff.
They are, and the Mariners are $2.20, so they are the favourites. Draw $3.70, Melbourne City at $2.90. And we've got one tomorrow night as well, Mido. Perth at home, $3.70, draw $4.25. Sydney FC at $1.80. And tomorrow on Thursday morning, we've got a heap of EPL matches. Some of the ones of interest tomorrow, Newcastle $1.95, draw $3.70. Everton $3.50, Burnley $2.70, Wolves are $2.50, so not much in that market. A draw there at $3.40, and probably the game of the day would be West Ham and Tottenham. The Hammers are $3.10, draw $3.90, and Tottenham favourites there at $2.05. So a handful of matches tomorrow, and the rest play on Thursday morning.
Day one of the championships coming up. We have a Derby and Doncaster barrier draw today.
Yeah, 10 o'clock.
Yep.
10 o'clock. So I'll just quickly go through those two markets, what they were. They're down at the moment, but obviously they'll be back up afterwards. But another Will, so impressive at the weekend. It's the $3.50, or was the $3.50 favourite to win the Doncaster. Celestial Legend was $5. Obam Buramai, the Japanese horse, was $8. There had been some money for Southport Tycoon, 15 into 11. As far as the Derby is concerned, well, Riff Rocket was the fave there at $2.80. Orchestra, well, not surprisingly, she is not going round in the Derby. She'll be sighted in the Oaks next week. Tom Kitten, the second favourite at $6. Y-Mark, which hadn't been nominated, so they're going to pay the late entry fee there at $6, along with Zardosi, and the rest are $11 or better. So once we have those fields and barrier draws done this morning, we'll have those markets up. There's a few others open for the weekend as on an all-in basis at the moment, but it's going to be some sort of a race day on Saturday.
Yeah, I believe we got all four group ones, won't we? Barrier draws today, I'm pretty sure.
Oh, is it? Okay.
I think so.
Maybe you're right. Maybe it's just the two that they're going to feature on Sky Channel, yes, which is the Doncaster and the Australian Derby. That would make more sense. So, and actually looking now, the TJ Smith and the English Sires, they're down as well. So I'd say you're right there. Well, just on those, the TJ Imperator is the fave there at $3. But I Wish I Win, the Victorian, has been 6 into 350. And Sunshine in Paris, 15 into 7. Whilst that's been going on, Private Eye out the gate, $4.50 out to $9. And Stormboy, the $2.50 favourite to win the English Sires. But Lady in Camelot over the last week, 6 into $4.50. Manal at 6, Traffic Warden 6, and Coleman at 8.
Thank you, Jared.
Thanks, guys.
Give us a call, 1353 53, on the text line 0419 767 272. We had Pup joining us briefly from India this morning as he's over there commentating the IPL, but unfortunately his connection was very dodgy, to say the least. So we'll have Pup back throughout his time over there in the IPL. Loz is here with me, though, and his Raiders, 18-0 up, but ended up 36. What was the final score? 36-22 on the weekend.
Not a great performance, Vinner.
The Sharkies there on Sunday night at Shark Park, and Ricky Stewart certainly wasn't happy about it.
No one deserved any praise, but they played well to start with, and then they, I don't know whether it was complacency or the Sharks just found a rhythm. But when you get 18-0 up, and I know in today's game you can lose momentum pretty easily, but I just thought the side that the Raiders had out there on the weekend would have showed a bit more resolve, been a bit more resilient. But they folded like a deck of cards. And well done to the Sharkies, because they were able to get themselves off the deck, because the previous week they got hammered 32-6 against the Tigers, and then down by 18, you're thinking, oh, geez, this could go pear-shaped for them. So I reckon Fitzy would have been happy with their performance. But yeah, the Raiders, not something you expect once you get out to an 18-point lead.
Another match we haven't touched on yet this morning over the weekend, the Warriors 20-12 over the Knights, that game over in Auckland. Gee, though, Luke Metcalf, he can't take a trick. Missed a good chunk of last season through injury. He now faces surgery and possibly months out, suffered a leg fracture in that win over the
Knights. Didn't look to be too much in it. Just looked like
really
a
innocuous,
nice tackle around the legs. We don't say that too often. But isn't it great to see the way that the Warriors have captured the public of New Zealand, their attention, because it was another full house there. They play a good brand of football. Although the worrying sign for me with the Warriors, they look good and then they have a poor period. So even on the weekend, Newcastle could have beaten them on the weekend. Yet I thought they were the dominant team, the Warriors. Mm. And when you look back at all their games this year, even against the Raiders, the one they won against the Raiders, they were in control, but then the Raiders fought back. So they're having little periods where they're just not getting it together for long periods. So that'll come back to bite them at some stage if they don't fix it. They got South this week, so that's a big game for South, but it's also a big game for the Warriors, travelling over here to Australia and trying to get the 2 points. So we'll see how it all sort of pans out.
John, morning. How are you?
How's it going? G'day, Laurie. How are you?
Hey, John. How are you, mate?
Quite a happy Tiger.
Actually. Oh, you would be too, mate. They've played well the last 2 weeks, haven't they?
Yeah, look, I'm really impressed with the way Benji's conducting himself, especially in the media. If the way he's conducting himself and that relaxed approach, it's translating onto the players, and it's no wonder they're feeling so free to try things. Like Lockie Galvin, who reminds me a little bit of Brad Fittler, Laurie, to be honest with you. I know it's a big statement, but he's got that little bit in him. You know?
Yeah, well, Biddo asked me this morning, who does he remind me of? And I couldn't say straight out who I thought he reminded me of. Freddie, probably because when Freddie hit the scene, Freddie had that big left foot step, and I haven't really seen that from Lockie, but that's a thing that stood out for me right from day one with Freddie. It was like, wow, who is this kid? You know, but there's no denying he's got plenty of talent and plenty of confidence, and I'm a bit like you. I like the way, and I said earlier this morning, like, that's why I get frustrated when I see like Dylan Browns and Matty Burton. Just like when the game was on the line there, yes, that was Lockie Galvin, 18-year-old. Like when games are on the line for the Bulldogs and Dylan Brown, I think we need to see that from those other two because they're experienced now. They've been in the game a long period, and or this Lockie Galvin might be just that special that we're talking about him in a different way in 2 or 3 years' time.
Yeah, let's hope so, mate. Middo, I've got a quick question I wanted to ask Clarkey last week, but never got the chance, mate. Do we open with Steve Smith against India?
Yeah, I think Clarkey's very much in that camp still, as it stands. So we lost connection with him this morning, unfortunately, over in India. So you'll be able to ask him that question when we got him on next, but From everything he's said to me, he's still in that camp for the time being. That you wouldn't change it, considering our next test is that particular test match. Would you change the order now with no other test matches heading into that? So, yeah, I think it was stick to the status quo was very much the camp that Clarkey was in. In regards to Steve Smith, but you got your concerns, don't you? But as we feared, there was no one really sticking their neck out as the obvious replacement. Cameron Bancroft, yes, maybe. I mean, who would you have, John?
That's a tough question because where we've backed ourselves into a bit of a corner now is if you move Smithy back down the order, who do you drop?
That's exactly right.
Now that's you're either shifting positions or who do you drop? Because I don't think anybody down the lower order warrants being dropped. So that's the tough part we've got ourselves into in a way. It's a difficult one. I mean, there's a couple of that their names don't come to mind, Mido, but there's a couple of young ones in the that performed well in the Shield this year that maybe we could look at. But then we're not prone to making those sort of changes when we've got a couple of big tours coming up, like India and then England the following year. Probably be after the England tour. So yeah, we've kind of backed ourselves into a bit of a corner, mate, haven't we?
I think you're right, for sure. I can't see us, I don't think, throwing someone to the wolves, so to speak, you know, first test against India at home. I'm pretty confident they'll stick to the Steve Smith. Well, I don't want to say it's an experiment, but, you know, him opening just for the reasons you've outlined. Who do you drop? So anyway, we'll see. We've got quite a bit of water to go under the bridge before we see the first test next summer. But we did have those Cricket Australia national contract lists announced late last week as well. And Marcus Harris, Ashton Agar, Marcus Stoinis, Michael Neeser, they were axed from the national contract list. Dave Warner, of course, isn't on it anymore with his retirement looming from, well, he's only got the 2020 World Cup to come in the middle of this year, but Xavier Bartlett was added along with Aaron Hardy, Matt Short and Nathan Ellis were added to those lists for the national contracts. But appreciate the call as always, John. We've got Sean. G'day, Sean. How are you?
All right, guys. How are you, mate?
Yeah, really well, thanks. What have you got for us?
I just was about the Bunnies. Have they Have they turned the corner? I'm saying probably not. I think the focus will change next 2 weeks. They got the Warriors and the Sharks and the bye. If they win those next two, that's all good. But then they got Melbourne and Penrith. The barometer will sit there, I reckon. So if they can get past one or two of them, then maybe I think it might be the corner turn. But until that arises, I think it's under the pump, mate.
Yeah, you're probably right there, Sean. I think all that mattered on the weekend was for them to win. They just had to find a way to win, and they did that. And it will give them plenty of confidence, don't worry. It gives them plenty of confidence just to win, knowing that whatever they're doing at training is working and can work, and now they're just going to build on what they did last weekend. The concern with their attack is they completed at 94% and were still only able to score 20 points. The South Sydneys of old, if they're completing at that rate, they're putting on a lot more than 20. So I think there's a lot of room for improvement, and we'll get a good indication this weekend when they take on the Warriors, because the Warriors are a good team.
Alex Johnston out for 6 weeks too.
Yeah, I saw that. I reckon if he's out for 6 weeks, because coming into the season, I thought he was a sneaky chance of breaking Ken Irvine's try scoring record.
Yeah, can't think that'd be happening.
Well,
now.
I think it'd be hard to do now. You know, he would have had to have everything go his way to do it this year. And the season that I was expecting from South was going to be a good one. But, yeah, to be out for 6 weeks, he'll probably struggle to break that record this year.
Ben, good morning.
Morning, guys. Happy Easter. Yeah. You had a good weekend.
You too, mate.
Yeah, had a great one, mate. Yourself?
Yeah, good. I've worked all weekend, so I couldn't be any happier.
Oh, so you're on holidays for today, are you? Having a day off?
Good man. I'll get around. I was going to do the lawns, but typical. It's raining down here this morning, so it's overdue rain.
Oh, well, as long as it's going to the right areas, mate.
That's what matters. I was going to do heroes, but you boys aren't doing it today, but I was going to give you my positive and negative of the weekend. My positive, how good those Jack jumpers. That was just the most incredible thing I've ever watched. My wife's really into basketball, and, mate, I was just like... Mm. I've never seen anything like that whole series. That was just next level. And I'm not a really big basketball fan, but I turned around and I said, I might start watching these a bit more now. It's actually caught me a bit. And my negative, I don't know if any of you guys caught the Hawthorn-Geelong game yesterday. What's Jack Giveven got to do to get a penalty?
Yeah, my goodness. Free kick,
That was just shocking yesterday. I was watching the game and I was like, geez, Hawthorn are coming back here. They're gonna give this a run. Mm. And... there was a part there. There was some crucial parts where he got taken high in their forward 50, and the rest, the umpire didn't call it. I know it's footy. Nick Foote, he's actually on the RSN coverage. So he even said that like a while ago on RSN that he doesn't get as many penalties as what he should be getting because a lot of it's to do with his history because he used to milk free kicks. Yeah. But even I'm now like, oh, this is a bit of a joke. And I think the AFL has to come out and go, you know, well, we made a couple of errors against him yesterday. Because I think I counted 7 high tackles that he did not get paid inside 50, which that would have changed the whole complexity of that game. The way the Hawthorn were playing, they actually might have won that game with that momentum they had in those certain points.
I saw Fox Footy talk about it. It might have been half time or a quarter time or whenever it was. And they were saying he's paying a price because he used to stage, and they gave the numbers of how many penalties he gained, and I think it was, I don't know, 20 something he got for being tackled high. And then when they spoke about it, and when they said that they weren't going to pay these type of infringements going forward, he hasn't got too many penalties for his team. So it went like something like about 24 or something like that, I think it was, down to 2 or 3. So they were basically saying there, since it was spoken about, he doesn't get the free kicks that he deserves now and should be getting, and he's paying a price for what occurred in the past.
Yep, that's been... quite a bit of commentary about that. Coming up, Steve Hewlett on Radio Tab. Dave Stanley, a huge racing HQ this morning because at 10 a.m. Eastern Daylight Time, Daylight Saving, I think it ends this week too, doesn't it? I'm pretty
Sunday,
sure.
Yeah.
Yep.
Saturday night/Sunday morning.
So we've got 10 a.m. this morning. The Derby and Doncaster barrier draws ahead of day one of the championships. Let's go to Steve Hewlett. Steve, good morning.
Good morning, Jerry. Good morning, everyone.
What have we got on today, mate?
Look, Tony Gollan, our premier trainer, is going to join me in a moment. This is so frustrating, this big wet that we've had. We lost Brisbane last Wednesday, Eagle Farm, Dooman on Saturday. He's got a big backlog of horses, obviously. And also, we're going to update all these stable stars, you know, Antino and the very progressive Freedom Rally and quite a few others as well. So Tony's going to join us. Chris Lee's going to join us. Also, John O'Shea to talk about linebacker and, of course, his representation this weekend as well. He's got Roslyn Starr, a very exciting colt going around this weekend. And Kerry Parker, I just wanted to reminisce on that marvellous career of his war horse, you know, Think It Over, who's now retired. But we'll just reflect on his career a little bit. And, yeah, we'll have a few other guests throughout the morning as well.
Sounds good, Steve. Thank you.
Thanks,
we'll catch you shortly. Coming up on Radio Tab, and Dave Stanley is joining us here in the studio. How are you, DS?
Morning, Minnow. Morning,
how was your Easter?
Easter was sensational. A lot of moving, a lot of getting into the new premises. But I tell you what, we're ready to go. These 2 weeks, we've got to just get a quid. And we've got a special edition of HQ today. It's going to be punters post-mortem. So we're going to re-look at what happened on Saturday in the weekend just gone. Chris Roots, Mitch Cohen and Blake Johnson from the leg up. And then we're going to go out to the barrier draws at Randwick, where we've got two barrier draws out of the barrel, the Doncaster and the Derby. And we'll take all that coverage live. And I'm going to get some confirmation through from the ATC that, and it's just come through, the size and TJ field will be later this morning. It'll be done auto by computer as per usual.
Okay, so we will get final fields today.
All four group ones.
Beautiful.
So we'll have markets. So tomorrow morning, your listeners, after I've done a bit of form tonight, can start to dissect the prices that Tim and the trading team put up. But today, two come out of the barrel, Doncaster Derby. So that'll be done live after 10 o'clock. And then later on after that, everything else done via the computer and the auto draw. But we will have those final fields, as you said. Now, Michael Wood is going to join us to kickstart punters post-mortem. He's the track manager at Randwick.
We need the latest data.
Oh.
All the instruments, everything they've got.
Well,
someone's got to cheer Lozza up because he's worried.
Why worried?
Mate, the weather.
No,
you know I'm a big weatherman.
Now this is. I thought about this morning driving in, right? I know you're a big weatherman, but
well,
mate,
so are you.
If
you're
I
the
ring,
weather gauge today,
100%. I love weather, but I'll tell you this right now: if I ring you Saturday morning and whisper into the phone and say, "Hey, Loz,
it's on,"
I've just spoken to Kieran Maher. This thing's been working in the deep sand at home. It loves the heavy track. Mate, you won't be worried about weather. You'll get down the pub and you'll be then telling everyone at the pub, this thing goes like a duck. It's got the flippers on. And so it won't deter you.
No. That is correct. But you could ring me on a Monday.
I could.
And say that some horse was running in Wagga.
Yep.
And give me the same information. 100%. And I'm doing the same thing.
100%. So I think that's one thing about the weather chat is that we all love. You know, and think about it too. When you see people, even away from races, like if it's a hot day, usually at the start of a conversation, gee, it's hot today, isn't it, mate? Yeah. Like that's all we talk about as humans.
We are the people.
We love it. So we're going to chat with Mike Wood because they've got their own system. Mm. And then I've spoken to Leanne West, who's the producer of my program. She's going to go to the Bureau of Meteorology. And we're going to have a meteorologist on the program tomorrow.
Yep.
And I'm going to find out.
Get the early mail.
Just to find out a bit. Because
do you reckon they'll cover themselves and say, listen, weather can change quite
100%.
Quickly.
100%. But obviously some are saying a minimal amount. Some are saying a large amount. Mm. And I'm going to ask the Bureau as well if they're in any punters clubs and how they go with their punters clubs. Because they love having a punt like us.
Well, if they like having a punt, they've got to.
You reckon they'd have a bit of a side punt? Do you reckon they'd sort of get together and go, I'll bet you carton that we get some severe storms,
in the
central west this afternoon. Righto, Loz, you're on. And you'd be going, no, mate, I'm looking at the
pressure. I'm reading the radar differently to you, so I'll take
they'd
that bet.
To.
Mate, 100% they'd
have to be into it. So that's our program.
Or is
today.
Everyone not as desperate as us?
It'd be interesting. To see how they... Oh, surely. Well, that's their...
I know, but they just come across as...
Hey, don't judge a book by its
cover. Hey, I know. But I don't think they'd be as excitable as us.
Mate, I reckon you might. There surely would be some meteorologists out there that listen to this program on their way into the bureau, and they'd be getting your tips, just following.
And just walk into that office and just be
Going, 100%. 100%.
What about this, boys?
Big
weekend.
Rain
this weekend.
Doing the wet
track. Rain this weekend. I've got
the wet track.
Form.
Actually, I wonder that. We should actually get them to look into the computer system. Mm. Imagine if all these wet trackers are off the map at the Bureau. There could be something in this.
That might be.
All these wet trackers are off the map and they're all coming out of, you know, out of, you know, Terry Hills. That's where the radar is, at Terry Hills. Middo's packed the computer. He's doing a pup. He's gone. By the way, can I just say, I know Pup had some tech difficulties this morning, but he's the best. Mate, he's done the old, you know, I can't hear you.
There's some noises coming out of that room too. I don't know what it was.
Good stuff. I hope you're pumped, boys. I'm up and about.
Yeah, so am I, mate.
All right. We'll see you tomorrow.